Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Institute for Personal Development, Kriya Yoga Ashram, where total consciousness is the new frontier.
Kriya Yoga is union of the individual with the divine. Join us as we explore the practices to initiate this process.
Good morning. Welcome to the Voice of Yoga. Let's Talk Consciousness. I am your hostess, Lisa Winton, and with me is Kenny Toy, also known as Swami Jayananda, founder of the Institute for Personal Development, located here in Hampton, New Hampshire. Good morning, Swami. Thank you for being here today. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing pretty good today. How about you?
Well, I'm doing pretty good today. Thanks for asking. And we want to thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Today on The Voice of Yoga, we will talk about struggle between matter and spirit. As it is stated in the Isha Upanishad, life in the world and life in the spirit are not incompatible. Work or action is not contrary to knowledge of God, but indeed, if performed without attachment, is a means to it. On the other hand, renunciation is renunciation of the ego of selfishness, not of life. So listen as we discuss the conversion from material beliefs to spiritual understanding. So welcome to the Voice of Yoga. We are talking consciousness. Join the Kriya Yoga Spiritual Advance. Get the light in your soul to know the truth that will set you free. So Swami, I thought what I would do today is tell our listeners about the word renunciation. And this is according to Wikipedia. And they describe renunciation to be the act of rejecting something, especially if it is something that the renouncer has previously enjoyed or endorsed. And then it goes on to explain, in religion, renunciation often indicates an abandonment of pursuit of material comforts in the interests of achieving spiritual enlightenment. So can you start us off and give us your idea as to what renunciation means and what we should do with it?
Yeah, I think what we're talking about here is just basic physics. You can't ever gain something without losing something. And what we give up with regard to material gain or benefit, we recuperate on a spiritual side with the invisible, intangible sources, as opposed to the visible and tangible. But I think the key here is to understand that you can't have both. And that's why the hero's journey typically always begins with the separation, the journey, then the return. And that's one of the things that I have noticed is that in a lot of the celebrity pseudo-spiritual communities today, the consensus is that we can indulge ourselves in the world and still be spiritual. And of course, that doesn't really resonate with the ancient scriptures. And the reason is because of the physics. But a key question that I think you might want to ask yourself is, why would anybody want to renounce the world? But remember, like it said in the Isha Upanishad, renunciation is renunciation of selfishness, not of life. So in order to really uphold this spiritual precept, you don't have to leave the world, you just have to detach yourself from it. And in the framework of trying to understand this concept of detachment, it's really helpful, I think, if you understand that you must be attached to something. And that's where having a sense of understanding of what being spiritual is, what is spirit, just that it is such a reliable source of sustenance.
Yeah, because we had stated in the summary that if performed without attachment is a means to it. So you're saying we have to attach ourselves to something else, and that's our means to getting ourselves attached to spirit.
Well, it actually becomes your source of sustenance. It becomes your source of energy. What metamorphosizes this concept of energy? It's one thing when we're doing things with instinct, appetite, preservation, survival, what is seemingly, you know, our fundamental source of energy, fear. And then it's another thing when we're doing things with human will and trying to do things mentally, where when we're doing it emotionally, when we're reactive, then we're at a lower animal nature. So we're operating from instinct, appetite. But then we start to move and we start to evolve and we start to do things intelligently, which is be more of human thought. And from this perspective, we develop passion. But then the highest octave of performance for a human being would be compassion, or the term is called wisdom or enthusiasm. And the origins of the word enthusiasm means with theos, that when the human is in tandem with divine law, is your optimal position of performance. But what we're finding is that you can't get here if you're attached to the lower realms, to either preservation and survival, instinct and appetite, or intelligence or human will.
You had mentioned the word fear. Do you think that fear is what drives us as a people to not want to renounce the world, because we're afraid of what our world would be, what our lives would be like if we don't have these things in our lives? It's all fear-based.
Absolutely. And to separate from that fear isn't easy at all. The analogy I always use is nobody really wants to jump out of a perfectly good airplane kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. The term in the spiritual community is referred to as rebirthing the body. And I really like that term, because one of the biggest areas of resistance comes from the actual experience that we had with our first birth. If you really think about it, you're in a utopian environment. Everything is being provided for you. You're in the dark. And you're comfortable and safe. And then all of a sudden, you're catapulted out of this comfort zone, what is safe, familiar, and known to you, and you're thrown into the light. And then you're forced to breathe air on your own. It's very traumatic. And a lot of times when in scripture, they make reference to being childlike, I really think that that's what they're talking about, because when we're going from material means to spiritual understanding and we have to let go of our attachment to what's safe, familiar, comfortable, and known. Only our first birth, it was done to us. We didn't have a choice. This second birth is really voluntary, that it's my choice, it's my decision, but all the forces are against me. And like you had said, fear becomes the biggest one, because the body doesn't really want to let go of the jurisdiction of your sense of self. Even though this is a false sense of existence that we're in, we're basically in the realms of suffering and decay, and we're in a very limited understanding of who we are. It's what we know. And it's being held by preservation and survival, which has a tremendous amount of power. And so you can't just detach that easily. And so this concept of renunciation becomes somewhat difficult for us to approach if you don't have good instruction and good leadership, because it really requires a certain degree of technique.
Now, you had talked about that you know, being in the womb, we have everything provided for us. We're in this utopian area. We just don't think that way anymore. Like you had even said to me the other day, it's like there is no such thing as lack when you have this connection with your divinity, because God does provide us for everything. So we could be living in a utopian world right now, but we have all bought into this material world that we're all enslaved in.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. And I always think of what von Goethe said, none are more hopelessly enslaved than those who falsely believe that they're free. Because we really think that getting whatever it is that we want on a material level is how we express freedom, instead of freedom from the cycle of death and rebirth. We're kind of going about our lives with some pretty bad information. And we have a tendency to believe anything that we hear anymore. And that's where I think it's helpful if you use these scriptures to substantiate maybe your philosophy or your belief system, however you're approaching your life. And in traditional forms of religion, this concept of renunciation is typically pretty well instated. And especially in Kriya Yoga, that this concept of purification, purging yourself of all unnecessary dependencies, mm-hmm. and preparing yourself for the reunion with this other source of sustenance that you literally want to rebirth your body in.
I have here from BibleTools.org. And it's a summary of the Luke chapter 14, 25 to 33, and states, self-renunciation is an indispensable condition of following Christ, required for accurately counting the true cost of allegiance to Him. And then it goes on to say, this condition of full and selfless service to God demands our hearts and our minds, not just our bodies. And that just reminded me of what you always say, you know, love the Lord thy God with your heart, your soul, and your mind.
Right. And I think the important thing here is that, just like what you had read off, this concept of counting the true cost of allegiance to Him. Now, what's important that you emphasize is that Him is with a capital H. And it's not a person. That following Christ is the Messiah. It wasn't a person, it is awareness of divine law in human consciousness. And what it does is it awakens us into the reality that we are created in the image of the divine, that we are eternal spiritual beings by nature. But in order for us to claim our birthright, we have to get out of this false sense of existence that is surrounded by sensual perception and created by sensual perception.
Well, I think this is a good place to pause to hear a word from our sponsors. So listeners, we'll be back with you in a few moments. Kriya Yoga Theory 2 is a unique and revolutionary practice and forum designed to facilitate the growth process in human development. Apotheosis is a real experience and has an evidence procedure. You cannot lead someone to permanent change by doing for them what they must do themselves. Personal accountability and responsibility are the foundation of Kriya Yoga Theory 2. You must be engaged and devoted. Prana power brings virtue to overcome fear, wisdom to overcome ignorance, purpose to overcome selfishness, enthusiasm to overcome laziness. Kriya Yoga is a path of action, knowledge, and devotion. These sessions are a celestial positioning system to guide the individual into union with the divine. For more information or to sign up for your next session online, go to www.ipdtransform.com. Namaste. Welcome back. For those of you just joining us, you're listening to The Voice of Yoga, and we are talking consciousness. So Swami, in my research for the show, I went on a website, BibleTools.org, and it is a commentary by Emmett Fox on the Sermon on the Mount, and this is in summary for Matthew chapter 5, verse 3, and he says, "To be poor in spirit means to have emptied yourself of all desire to exercise personal self-will, and what is just as important, to have renounced all preconceived opinions in the wholehearted search for God. It means to be willing to set aside your present habits of thought, your present views and prejudices, your present way of life, if necessary, to jettison, in fact, anything and everything that can stand in the way of finding your God." Now, I know we've been talking a lot about how to make this connection, but I wanted to get your take on that particular summary by Emmett Fox.
Giving up this personal sense of I, personal interest, and selfishness is essential in being able to usher in the true spirit. And so I would agree that what he's talking about, poor in spirit, what he's really referring to is giving up personal will. When we do that, the whole intention here is not to lose entirely your sense of self, but you want to change from a personal sense of I to an impersonal sense of spiritual selfhood, that you want to re-identify yourself with this part of yourself that is eternal. And when we have awareness of this, it opens us up to the benefits that can come from this resource.
Well, we've talked about this before, I think, but how do we go about doing that? Or what does that look like?
Well, for me, it's a big change in your values. You go from material values, and on a really subtle level, moving from using food to validate yourself, using external circumstances and situations to validate yourself, the misconception of what we call self-esteem today, that we create support groups, that we reinforce ourselves externally. But here you want to really start to rely on what it is that you really do need. So there has to be a conversion. Because remember, we come in with a pattern that we look for food, mother, and approval for validation. That's preservation and survival. That's what has quite a bit of power for us, and that's where all of our fears originate from. So you have to treat it, and the way I usually approach it is, your body's like a monkey, and a monkey won't let go one branch unless it has another branch in the other hand. So you start to usher in the idea of an essential need, because even though food is an essential need, it's not as important as air or prana, the life force. And so upgrading your value system and putting the things that are really important in their position of importance kind of gives you this tool in your arsenal, so that now you can separate from external reinforcement, and you can start to rely more and more on what you really do need. Your number one need, which, as we always say, is put God first. But remember, it's invisible and it's intangible, and our bodies are really looking for something to sink their teeth into for validation. And that's where we move from the mouth to the nose. So you go from food to air, because the fall from life-sustaining force number two to life-sustaining force number one is nominal. And the minute you can start to elevate your thoughts to this essential need, then you're changing how you think and you're affecting your number one life-sustaining force. When you have this type of technique that you employ, then the separation from the outside world is pretty seamless.
I had read in a few different sources online, they were talking about practicing renunciation, and one technique was to try to eliminate one thing, if you can, during the course of the day. And they used the example of, try to eliminate one cup of coffee the first day. And then the next day, have two cups of coffee. And then think about what it was like when you didn't have one as opposed to when you had the two. And I guess this was supposed to help train the mind to, see what it was like without that cup of coffee. And then you were supposed to wean yourself off of it. So I don't know. What did you think about practices like that?
Yeah, that's the whole thing of abstinence. And that really kind of is reinforced in the whole religious community to abstain. I really don't think there's much benefit to it, because what you're developing is human will. And the intention here is that we really want to give up personal interest. So rather than trying to abstain from things that you're using to validate yourself and strengthen your will, to do it from the top down really is to love the Lord thy God with your heart, your soul, and your mind. So what you basically want to do is, rather than get too caught up in the conduct, you want to really focus on the connection. It really is determined by what resource is it that I'm using to validate myself? What is it that I desire as my source of happiness and joy? And when you make the conversion and you're using what you really do need to produce the feeling that you're happy, things change dramatically. Because like I said, when you're using spirit to validate yourself and you are in harmony with divine law seeking expression, then you have the benefit of spiritual power that you can't get with human will or material means.
So, Swami, I have here a quote from Miscellaneous Writings by Mary Baker Eddy that I think may reinforce some of these issues that we're talking about today. And she writes, "Mortals will lose their sense of mortality, disease, sickness, sin, and death, in proportion that they gain the sense of man's spiritual preexistence as God's child, as the offspring of good, and not of God's opposite, evil, or a fallen man." And I just kind of wanted to know what you think about that.
Yeah, I think it's a great way to say exactly what we're talking about here. And I especially like what she talks about man's spiritual preexistence as God's child, right? Because if we are eternal spiritual beings, then our lives didn't begin with conception. Our lives didn't begin with birth in a body. So bringing us beyond this false sense of existence that we have, that we've kind of found ourselves in, that we're trying to escape from. Also, I like the thing that she talks about here about losing your sense of mortality, our belief in disease, sickness, sin, and death, which is really what we're inundated with. Our preoccupation with that isn't really optimal for maximizing the experience of being human that really comes with spiritual understanding. And so when she talks about here that all of this is in proportion, as we gain the sense of man's spiritual preexistence as God's child. And I really like her concept of God being only good. And the one, because that's a theme that we've been talking about quite a bit, that there's a difference between duality, which is a mix of good and evil, and spiritual understanding, which is the unified state. And these are very different sources and resources. all of the benefit comes when we separate from our attachment to duality and we join with the unified state, that it's the concept of spirit that really has all the power.
Well, in this quote, she says, God's opposite, evil or a fallen man. How would you describe a fallen man?
Yeah, that's an important theme, the fallen man, the fall from Eden in the Bible. And the Bible portrays that with the story of Adam and Eve and the thing of the tree of life and the tree of knowledge and the tree of good and evil. God says to Adam and Eve, you can't eat from these trees, you can eat from these trees. And if they eat from the tree of life, then of course they're in the realms of paradise. But one bite of an apple from one of those other trees, and they're in the realms of suffering and decay. So that brought in the whole concept of the original sin. And again, sin being an archery term, meaning missing the mark, we come in and we're attached to one of those other trees. We're attached to particles and waves, to duality, which is fear and limitation. And the whole intention of renunciation from our attachment to that is to join with this tree of life, or life itself. But whatever you call it doesn't matter, is that it is a resource that's available to us. And if we prepare ourselves for it, that we can connect with it. And that's what we're really striving for, that these scriptures are instruction to do something. Not something to believe in, but that it actually produces what was called transformation.
Yeah, in our notes, we have another quote by Mary Baker Eddy, again in miscellaneous writing. She states, spiritual relation to deity, it is not then a personal gift, but is the order of divine science. I was wondering if maybe you could shed some light on that quote for us.
Well, the thing I think that's really great about Christian Science and where it kind of dovetails with Kriya Yoga is that Kriya Yoga is also a spiritual science. The way I see this, it's not then a personal gift. It's not something that's just handed to us, but it's something that we have to take the responsibility to be able to access or create for ourselves, but in the order of divine science. And so, again, what she calls Christian Science, a lot of times I think I call the physics of spirituality, with this concept of the physics of spirituality is like attracts like. And so if we desire particles and waves, then we will be like fear and limitation. But if we desire this indivisible unified state, then we will be like divine law. And the nice thing about being like divine law is that it is all good. It is moving lifeward. There is no force that opposes it, that it is completely self-existent. Let me just close things here with another reading from Miscellaneous Writings by Mary Baker Eddy, page 184. The will of God, or power of spirit, is made manifest as truth and through righteousness, not as or through matter, and it strips matter of all claims, abilities or disabilities, pains or pleasures. Self-renunciation of all that constitutes a so-called material man, and the acknowledgement and achievement of his spiritual identity as the child of God, is science that opens the very floodgates of heaven, whence good flows into every avenue of being, cleansing mortals of all uncleanness, destroying all suffering, and demonstrating the true image and likeness. There is no other way under heaven whereby we can be saved, and man be clothed with might, majesty, and immortality. That's a mouthful.
So about that time, we need to start closing down our show for today. So listeners, I invite you out there to visit the website. It's www.ipdtransform.com. Once you're there, you can make comments about this show or give us ideas for future shows you'd like us to do. Also visit Swami on Pinterest, Twitter, and of course on Facebook. But do keep those comments and questions and curiosities coming, because we do enjoy hearing from you. And we will be sure to have another great show for you next week. Also, don't forget, on Wednesdays at 5 o'clock is our Facebook Live episodes that we like to do every week for you. So, Swami, do you have any other final thoughts or comments about today's program?
Well, I would like to wish everybody good luck with their quest for getting out of the cycle of death and rebirth. And with that, I'll wish everybody a good day. Namaste.
And thank you for listening to our program, The Voice of Yoga. This is Lisa Winton, along with Swami Jayananda. We'll be signing off. Have a wonderful Kriya Yoga kind of day. Namaste.